Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This Ben Jarofsky Show, Benny J. Bonus Interview, is brought to you in part by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 and District 8, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, and the Chicago Federation of Labor. Benny J., take it away.
Bonus time in the Ben Jarofsky Show. It is, what is today, Friday, November 15th. When you're listening to this, Lord knows, the doctor will be the one who decides when it gets dropped. He's the all-powerful being behind the show, who's like the spider that spins the web.
Not a doctor.
Okay. And so as we always do on bonus time of the Ben Jarofsky Show, I ask my distinguished guest to introduce him or herself. So, distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
Hey there. This is Colin Boyle. I'm a senior at Northwestern University.
Yes, and everybody out there's going, Colin Boyle, that Colin Boyle. Yes, indeed. If you were a reader of the New York Times on Thursday, November 14th, you know that Colin is a photojournalist at Northwestern, Are you a student of journalism?
I'm a student of journalism in Spanish language. Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We could do this whole interview in Spanish.
I'd really rather not.
Me too, since I don't speak it. It would really be difficult for me. Anyway, this is a story that I've been particularly obsessed with. And Colin was so nice to come on the show and talk about it. This is the story that had erupted, I want to say, about a week ago from today, at the start of this week, where all of a sudden Twitter exploded, where it turned out, well, we'll get into the details. I'll let Colin explain the details of what went down at Northwestern. But basically what we had was a situation, as I said the other day, D, harumph, as older journalists, including some of my generation, even younger than me. I mean, a lot of them were younger than me. You're too young to sound the way you guys sound. Harumph. In my day, we did it this way. Anyway, all these old journalists started harumphing all over. Harumph. And something turned into Michael Keller Ditka, you know, the way that football should be played. No helmets. Anyway, I'm sorry, Colin. I didn't mean to go on that riff. But anyway, so this is a story about journalism. It's a story about how journalists go about their business, journalistic ethics. Should journalists reconsider the things that they've been doing forever? I don't know. Maybe every now and then you rethink about what you've been doing. Maybe you can learn something from a kid. No, that's a real radical thought, learning from a child. So anyway, let's take...
Not a child, 21 years old.
That's correct.
That is correct. You can learn from your children, teach your children. All right. Anyway, so let's just start at the beginning. But first of all, proud graduate of Lane Tech High School. Let's get that out there.
Absolutely.
So you're from the city of Chicago. And you went to Northwestern to study journalism?
Yes.
Were you a journalist at Lane? Did you work for the school newspaper there?
Yeah, so I worked for the Lane Warrior my senior year. I also started my freshman year of high school as a photojournalist for sports photography, mainly for a company called Milesplit, where I've now been working for going on my eighth year.
And you can't see this, folks. We're not filming this particular interview, but he's an incredible camera. You just bought that camera today to fool me, or you really are a photojournalist.
I believe Ben's exact quote when he saw that camera was, "Man, dang!" Both of those.
Yeah, I think I did say that. All right, so let's talk about what went down and when it started. It began with a speech at Northwestern by former Attorney General Jeff Sessions, correct?
That is correct, yes.
All right, take it from there.
Yeah, so the Northwestern University College Republicans announced, I'd like to say like early to mid-October, that they're inviting Jeff Sessions to come speak on campus. In the past... These kind of events draw a lot of controversy, especially given the historical context surrounding Jeff Sessions and his and everything he's done in his administration, whether it's in the Senate or working with President Trump. And so there was expected to be a lot of backlash, a lot of controversy around this, and I signed up to take photos for it for the Daily Northwestern, where I used to be photo editor for 2 years of my time at Northwestern, and now I'm just the washed-up senior staff photographer.
Young to be washed up. Go ahead.
I feel it. No, so this is something I've been doing for good 5 years. Breaking news photography, protest photography, big speaker event photography. So I thought I would be prepared to do this. When I cover events such as this, I try and do live Twitter coverage with images that I send from my camera to my phone. So, you know, start a Twitter thread like most journalists do, get photos up of people in line to attend the event, protesters organizing outside the event, and protesters hurling insults at those entering the building, and just keeping this up to date as much as I could. Mm-hmm. So I went into the building.
What day was this? Do you remember what day it was?
It was Tuesday, November 5th.
Got it. Go ahead. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So about 10 days ago now. And so I went into the building as the event was about to start and made about 20 seconds worth of images of Jeff Sessions as he entered and as he started making his remarks. And I heard something going on out in the hallway, or the entranceway rather, to the building. There's an entrance on the north side and the south side of Lutkin Hall over at Northwestern University. And so I went out there with my camera, and I noticed that students and activists are trying to enter the building from the south entrance, and there were Northwestern University police officers physically blocking off these the activists, and the students actually eventually broke past the police, and that's when the police started, you know, being pretty, you know, strong-handed in their actions there. I saw students being slammed to the ground. There was a huge, like, just scuffle there for, felt like a few minutes, and I was right in the middle of it all. So, you know, I was taking images, doing my job as a photojournalist, and trying to understand what was going on at this time. And as the dust started to begin to settle, I noticed that there were at least one, if not two, body cameras knocked off the police officers that were on the ground. So I started switching my camera from just my colleagues, my peers, my classmates being shoved by officers, knocked down to the ground, to also as a journalist, you know, the only other visual representation of what's going on being on the ground. And after reviewing my images, I actually noticed that most officers at that moment were not wearing body cameras until the dust settled, and that's when they started distributing cameras.
So did you actually have photographs of the officers removing their body cameras, or did you just have photographs of the body cameras on the ground?
I just noticed the body cameras that were on the ground. They might have been knocked off, the officers, during the scuffle, but, you know, that's not part of my expertise. Unfortunately, I don't know the whole background of how an Axis body camera works, but I did notice that, as, you know, the police officers were able to build a human wall to stop activists from entering the vestibule of the event space. That's when I noticed that officers were starting to distribute the cameras.
And these are, again, just to be clear, Northwestern University security.
Yes,
so it's NUPD. Northwestern's in Evanston, but these were not Evanston police.
No.
These are Northwestern. Now, was it clearly identified, Colin, that you were there as a photojournalist? Did you have a press pass around your neck?
At the Daily Northwestern, we don't have press passes, but I've been working there for 4 years. I know the administration. I know a lot of the officers, and I try and make it pretty clear in my conversations with people when they ask that I'm there for the Daily Northwestern. I try and make my efforts and intentions as a journalist as transparent as possible.
All right. So it's pretty obvious here that you're a photojournalist.
Yeah.
And you're taking pictures of this scene, and continue with your story.
Yeah. And so from there, I took the images, downloaded them to my phone, and I tweeted them up in the Twitter thread that I already built, saying, you know, student activists attempted to enter the building, and they were met by police officers, and the scuffle ensued, and body cameras were knocked onto the ground. And in those images that I shared on Twitter, in that thread, there were images of the student activists being knocked down to the ground by officers. And in the last image, you can notice a body camera in the image. And this is where, you know, after the event, this is where I received all the root of the backlash about my Twitter coverage of the event, is the fact that these images have clearly identifiable activists in it. In these images, and there also wasn't a heavy presence of the police officers at the time in those images that I had shared.
All right, now, so tell me, they're identifiable if you know them. Mm-hmm. Did you put their names?
No, I did not.
So, in other words, they're only identifiable if you actually know the person, correct?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
And so that's where a lot of the backlash was rooted. You know, I was, people on Twitter took to it to say that I was using this for trauma porn, for, you know, just to get people's attention. And again, and there was a whole discussion about, you know, me not getting consent to make these images. And that's where the whole, this whole conversation kind of was rooted in, right, where First Amendment free speech kind of gets kind of murky in today's world of the internet and with images being so easily accessible. So after the event, after the Jeff Sessions event actually ended, I went home to edit my photos, and that's when I noticed the backlash on Twitter, and I called our photo editor at the Daily Northwestern, and I called the editor-in-chief, and I said, hey, I'm coming in, and I've been getting this backlash, and I think we should talk about whether or not I should remove all the images off of Twitter. And I, because this is, it's a policy the Daily has had in the past where, you know, if you're covering a controversial situation, that we have an editorial discussion as to what images we should and should not publish.
I see. Now, let's just hold off for a second. Yeah. So you were getting, so that, in other words, the people whose images were on your Twitter feed were Northwestern students who knew you.
Yeah, or they saw my coverage because the Daily Northwestern was retweeting my thread.
I see. And yeah. So that's how they reached out. So were there any people who knew you that, like, were speaking to you in a personal way? Like, hey, Colin, knock it off, take it off.
I got a few personal messages, yes.
All right. Yeah. So now let me ask you this question. And I don't want you to throw any of your professors at Northwestern under the bus. So you've taken journalism courses at Northwestern?
Just a few, yeah.
A few, okay. and in your entire career as a journalism student at Northwestern, have you ever had a class in which the teacher, the professor, led you through a discussion of the ethics of using someone's image without getting their consent?
Yeah, we had a class called Media Law and Ethics taught by Professor Doppelt, you know, not to name names, but, you know, it was a really great class, and that covered the legal aspects of journalism and a little bit about images, and we also talked, we did case studies every week, so one of the studies we had was the Laquan McDonald case here in Chicago. We talked about Hulk Hogan, that case a few years back, so that class was focused on legalities of First Amendment, freedom of speech, and also how that ties into journalism, but no specific course just on photo ethics. I took Intro to Photojournalism, and that was mostly about composition and, you know, stylistic choices and how to tell a story through images.
Okay, see, I'm asking for something really specific,
yeah.
So I'm going to rephrase it. A legal class taught by a journalism professor where they talk about libel suits like the Hulk Hogan suit is specifically about protecting yourself against a lawsuit and libel and what you have to do. Mm-hmm. That's a different issue. I'm talking about the ethics of if I say, you know what, I'm just going to take Colin's picture right now and put it on my Twitter feed and just use it without asking him about it, without talking to him about who I am, without identifying myself as a photojournalist. Has anybody ever, I'm asking this part, Colin, because I've never been to journalism school. I have a confession here. I've been doing in this business for 5,000 years, and I've never taken one journalism course. So I don't know what is taught in journalism. So I'm literally asking this question because I don't know the answer. So do they even discuss it? Has there ever been a discussion about, like, is it ethical to take someone's picture without getting their permission? Is it ethical to go take a quote from somebody without identifying yourself? Has that ever been discussed?
Yeah, we always talk about, you know, the ethics behind our decisions and our editorial choices as journalists. You know, we always talk about how if we make an image, what kind of story does that tell? And especially if we don't involve the person in the process of it, the kind of power and privilege that image carries, especially because you didn't purvey your decision and why you did that or who you are. So it's a conversation that we're always having in journalism school, but no specific course around
that. So it's the journalists, the kids themselves, the students themselves have these conversations.
And it's been brought up in, like, you know, my photojournalism class is like, hey, if you're on public property, you can make an image of literally anything you want. And that has repercussions. It has, you know, nuances to it, but more or less, you know, any image you make, free reign.
All right. Yeah. So any that's generally the conventional wisdom in journalism. Any image you make, free reign. All right. So let's go back to the events of November 5th. You're at the journalism office. You're with your colleagues at the Daily Northwestern. You've registered these complaints that have come in on your Twitter feed. What's the conversation that you and the other journalists are having?
Yeah. So what I was saying is I was like, hey, I've been getting a lot of, you know, backlash on Twitter about my damages. I'm willing to take these down if you think that's a good idea. I already drafted kind of a response statement to put up on Twitter, you know, apologizing because for adding what I was accused of is adding additional trauma to the already very scary, traumatic, tense moments that these student activists are going through, you know, being slammed by police officers, having the presence of a person who whose ideologies make students feel threatened in the United States, especially on campus. And I put up a statement saying, like, hey, my intention here was not to add any additional trauma here. I'm just as much of a student as you are. My job here as a student journalist and as a journalist as a whole is to inform my communities. And right now my community is the Northwestern student population because I'm working for the Daily Northwestern. And that's why I chose the images that I chose, because it informs my peers. If I was on the other end, like if I was on Twitter and saw photos of my friends being slammed, I would be genuinely concerned as well. But I would want to know, I'd want to know what's going on in my community. And that's why I chose the images, not to, you know, just for clicks, not for attention, but to inform those who are paying attention to what's going on.
And so that was the decision. Did everybody agree with you on this point?
Yeah, I sat down with the photo editor. I sat down with the editor-in-chief. So photo editor Evan Robinson, amazing guy. And then the photo or the editor-in-chief, Troy Closen, whose name has been all over the place, and he's been just a rock star in this whole situation. So I sat down with both of them. I was like, hey, guys, this has happened. And if you guys are okay, this is the decision I think we should make on my Twitter account. And then, you know, for the story, the actual story that we're running in the Daily Northwestern, have a little bit of conversation of what images we should choose to publish for the story about the protest and the story about Jeff Sessions speaking.
All right. By the way, I just should add, I reached out to Troy as well, and he couldn't make it, whatever. He didn't want to come. It doesn't matter. I'm glad you're here, Colin. All right. But Troy, anytime you want to stop by, feel free. All right. So, that was the decision that you reached. Everybody agreed it was the right thing to do. And what was the response?
Things kind of died down there on Twitter after, you know, I made that statement.
Wait, tell me, did any students say thank you?
I was actually reached out to, yeah. So I've been making a conscious effort to reach out to activists if they so choose or continue this conversation. That's why I've been fielding a lot of these interview requests is because it's a conversation that, you know, out of all the Daily Northwestern editorial staff, which we haven't even gotten to the editorial yet in this conversation,
right.
A lot of the students there have been fielding a ton of backlash, a lot of hateful messages, and I've been fortunate enough not to be on the receiving end of so much of that, so I have a little bit more time to, you know, take this privilege of not being under so much, you know, fire and carry on and have these conversations that I'm able to have about, you know, the power and the privilege that we as journalists have and how we need to navigate this and keep doing our job, because journalism now is more important now more than ever. And yeah, it's so, you know.
All right, I didn't mean it. Yeah, you were on a tangent there. So, I mean, I put us on a tangent. So go back to, so it kind of died down.
Yeah,
and then
it died down, yeah. It died down, but at the Daily Northwestern, we all had an all-staff meeting on Sunday. You know, it was a conversation that Troy and the editorial staff was saying that, hey, this Sunday, we all need to meet to talk about the last week's coverage, to also talk about what we as an institution need to do going forward to make sure that we are ethical about our reporting and also compassionate as human beings, because we're not just journalists, we're human beings just as much as everyone else that we're reporting on. So we had a great conversation on Sunday, an all staff meeting. We broke into groups, talked about, you know, what we were concerned about, what we wish was done differently, and what we wish we could do differently. You know, how do we contact sources? How do we make sure, like, because how do you get a source? How do you get a quote? You got to talk to someone, right? Mm-hmm. But in those efforts, you got to make sure that your intentions are clear. Like, hey, I'm Colin Boyle. I got your phone number from the Northwestern directory, for example. That's an issue that a lot of students were upset about, because student journalists were reaching out to students without, you know, making it clear how they got their phone number. That feels pretty invasive. Or, you know, only reaching out to marginalized communities when there's an issue or, you know, when things go awry. No, that's not how journalism is. And that's how journalism has been. And it's not how it should be. We got to make sure we are elevating voices that, you know, without being patronizing, without being white saviors, we got to elevate voices here that usually in like the typical news cycle, you see just, you know, only if there's someone hurt, if there's, you know, something going wrong, you know, we got to make sure we're involving every community in our journalistic process. So that's the conversations we were having. And the editorial staff said, hey, tonight the editorial staff is going to write the editorial. And, you know, flash forward to Monday going into Tuesday, that's when the media whirlwind really picked up. Part two.
The editorial got out. what was the backlash? What was the response?
Gosh, I got out of class on Monday after already having read the editorial that morning during my first class. People on campus are already starting to talk about it, and I go on Twitter because, you know, I'm not just a student at Northwestern, but I'm also a freelance journalist in Chicago, so I've got a lot of colleagues on Twitter that I've been following, and I started seeing a lot of people starting to share the editorial and kind of ripping apart student journalists for trying to have this conversation. You know, I was formerly a part of the editorial staff for a good 2 years of my time at Northwestern, and the editorial is also about me, so, you know, it's something I'm not super comfortable talking about directly, whether or not I agree or disagree, but my gut reaction is, man, I'm so proud of all of us student journalists and all of us students for starting these conversations and for being brave enough to, you know, delve into these issues that have been going on for so long, I believe, and finally given a platform to have this discussion. So, yeah, going on Twitter, it hurt a lot to see people I look up to kind of ripping us apart, you know, when at the same time you could use this platform, use your position and your power to have these conversations, involve and inform, because we're students. We're all here learning as much as we all try to be professionals. We're still learning.
So what was the general reaction of journalists who read that editorial?
Yeah.
If you could just sort of summarize the response.
Yeah, a lot of backlash for the editorial apologizing for us doing just literal journalism, when a lot of people that were making these statements didn't understand the nuances behind why the Daily made this statement. You know, we have Troy Closen, one of the three only people of color editors in chief of the Daily in the over 135 years of the newspaper's existence, who's brave enough to start these conversations, right? You know, Troy has been having these conversations since day one at the Daily Northwestern. How do we, you know, I can't speak to his experience, but, you know, from what I've understood here is, how do we make sure we involve everyone in these processes? How do we, you know, not just use marginalized communities for clickbait, and how do we make sure we're not having people speak for an entire community? That's one of the things, you know. A lot of the reactions were very negative, but also we saw a lot of positive, you know, people saying, hey, use this as a learning moment. Use this as a teaching moment. Use your power as professional legacy journalists for good, and have these conversations and uplift journalists and uplift communities and, you know, make our process a lot more aware. And that's what I've been doing. I've been doing just that, you know, trying to take any media requests that I'm able to and have these conversations here, talk about the power and the privilege that we have as journalists. And, you know, again, like I've said, we're not going to not do journalism. When I met with one of the activists yesterday, she told me straight up, I'm not telling you not to do your job. I'm telling you to take a lot of things into consideration, because, you know, being a white guy with a camera for a publication carries a lot more weight in free speech than being an activist, is what I was told. And this is a sentiment from the last week that we've all picked up on, and how do we navigate this and still do our job, but make sure we're being compassionate, ethical, and engaging, and having these conversations and also taking time to listen.
What if you have a great image that you just took,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, oh man, that is a perfect picture. It just captures the essence of everything. And the subject says to you, I don't want you to use it. So what are you going to do that? Because on one hand, you got like, there's a part of you, Colin, that is like, I want to be ethical, mm-hmm. and do the right thing and respect people's rights, etc. And there's a part of you that's like a journalistic beast that wants the image, man.
Yeah.
You know, you're in the game for this, the adrenaline. That's why you're doing this. You know what I'm
Not
saying?
Not just that.
Okay,
yes.
I corrected. But anyway, that's part of it. So what are you going to do?
You continue these conversations. You know, I was asked, like, is this my protocol, or was this a one-off situation last week? And I said, no, this is my protocol, is to always have these conversations as much as I can, you know, try and engage the subjects of the images. Hey, and let them know, like, hey, I'm Colin Bull. I'm here with the Daily. I'm doing my job here. I'm trying to do my best to be responsible and respectful. But, you know, these images are for the Daily Northwestern, and, you know, just get, like, making my presence transparent enough so that people understand why I'm there and that I'm not there to just manipulate and get that one big shot and bounce out. No. You know, every time I make an image that I really enjoy, or just an image in general, I try and engage subjects if the space allows it. You know, if it's not tumultuous, or if I have a moment of clarity and calmness, I try and engage. And that's what helps out a lot.
And do you think that some of the older journalists who were upset with the editorial, who think the editorial went too far, do you think they were fair in their criticisms?
I mean, we all are you know, through First Amendment, for freedom of speech, as we've been talking about here. Everyone's guaranteed their own opinion. And, you know, everyone's takes are just as valid as everyone else's. You know, I may or may not agree with what everyone has to say, but at the same time, we're having these conversations here where we as student journalists are reshaping what journalism is in this, as we enter this new decade. And crazy, right? 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're here to... You know, if I wasn't in journalism, I'd do stand-up comedy.
Yeah. No. As we enter this new decade, I'm like, oh, yeah, we are. It is a new decade.
Craziness, right? And I'll be all of 22 then, you know? We're trying to have these conversations here and understand the nuances of our coverage. We're trying to understand that not every situation can be, you know, have a blanket reaction, blanket response. We got to engage. We got to be transparent. We got to, you know, be caring. And we also got to keep doing our job because... You know, the journalism for even my 8 years in the field already, and I'm only 21. In my 8 years of the field, you know, I've seen such a dramatic shift of how stories are covered, how the media is perceived, especially with today's political climate where we're seen as the enemy of the American people and all that garbage. No, we're here to inform. We're here to be, you know, the first take of history, right? Mm-hmm. Is the cheesy cliches that you can keep pulling out as much as you want. We're here to tell people what's going on. Mm-hmm. And how do we tell people what's going on? We got to know what's going on to tell people what's going on.
Fair enough. Now let's flip the switch a little bit. Get your thoughts on this one.
Let's hear it.
Let's say you're at a Trump rally.
Yeah.
And you have a great image of a bunch of Trump supporters looking really mean, nasty, mm-hmm. And hateful, which has been known to happen at a Trump rally once
no
or
comment.
Twice. No comment. I like that, man. So do the same... standards hold? Do you feel obligated to ask people for permission?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, when I was up in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this summer, I fully photographed Donald Trump's arrival to the airport before he did a little day of, you know, touring around and campaigning. And I went up to Trump supporters and asked if I can use their image or if I can take their image. You know, at the Jeff Sessions event, students that were in attendance of the event came up to me and said, hey, please don't use my image. And as much as that is frustrating on both ends, you know, you got to respect that. You got to take that into consideration. You got to have these conversations. Be like, hey, okay, I understand, but, you know, this is why I'm here. And if they still are like, no, then you're like, all right. You know, it's like, it's just the same as like going off the record in an interview.
Explain that distinction. That's a very good point. Explain that.
You know, it's what people are comfortable with. And, you know, if we're talking here and I say, this is off the record, you know, you can't use that. And it's the boundaries that they set, that the interviewee sets, and that the subject sets. And you got to like pick that apart a little bit. You got to, you know, try and have these conversations to still be like, hey, like, this is a public event. Mm-hmm. You know, this is public act. This is public, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm doing my job here as a public servant, as a journalist, and making these conversations clear. And, you know, you just got to keep holding that off and keep building up and, you know, trying to make your intentions clear and see, you know, like without pushing, without being patronizing, but you got to, what I'm trying to do going forward here is just trying to, you know, just keep these conversations going.
No, I appreciate what you're saying. I've been thinking about this a lot. I've done so many interviews down through the years, and sometimes you're doing an interview with somebody and they'll say something and then they'll go, oh, that was off the record. And there's a journalistic instinct. I know a lot of reporters who would say, I am sorry, you did not. They're suddenly they turn into a lawyer. You did not like sign that verbal waiver at the beginning of the interview and say that's off the record. You can't like go back in time and do the, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
My attitude has always been cut the guy some slack or cut the woman some slack. Or, all right, you know, all right, can we figure, or you say, can we figure a way you say that?
There you go. That's what I mean? I'm saying. You have this conversation, yeah. Try building it out and picking things apart and be like, you know, that may be off the record, but why? You know, tell me a little bit so I can understand where you're coming from and I can still navigate the story. I can still navigate this conversation, this interview, et cetera, and still get my story out there, still make sure your intentions are heard. And, you know, at the end of the day, we both feel a little bit better because we both understand everyone's intentions a little bit more.
Absolutely. All right. So, again, this story has been at the New York Times at least twice. It's been
all over Chicago media, all over Chicago, Washington Post, right. Associated Press. It's been a week. Yeah.
All right. So, what's your takeaway from the coverage? You're now, for the first time in your life, you've been in the role, the position that a lot of these student activists are. You yourself have been the target, if you will. So what's your reflections on the media now that you've been the subject?
You know, my goal here is never to become the story. As journalists, that's our last intention, especially for me. But through all this media whirlwind, my reflection here is, you know, it's crazy being on the other side. And it's like a kind of a cruel taste of our own medicine here as journalists, right? You know, the other day I had a really great interview with the New York Times, and I felt kind of bummed. Like, I took to Twitter. I was like, wow, I had a great interview talking about like our power and privilege as journalists and trying to navigate that and reflect on that. And all I was quoted as saying, like, I was panicked about my photos. And I was like, man, I'm so pissed. Like, how could they do that? Take my 30-minute interview and just squander it to this? And I was like, wait a second. This is why people are mad at the media, right? Like, the whole, like, you know, you try saying one thing and out of the entire conversation, only one itsy bitsy piece is chosen.
Yeah.
So it's been a lesson. It's been a time for reflection and, you know, making sure media literacy is a conversation we're having here day in and day out, making sure that we engage the people we're working with, the people that we're interviewing. And it's on us to start these conversations. It's also on us to listen. It's on us to be compassionate. It's on us to, you know, keep doing our jobs because that's what we're doing. That's our job, to be photojournalists, to be photographers, journalists, reporters, et cetera.
Well, anyway, I appreciate you coming to the show and taking us through the A to Z on this thing. And I'll just say this, as an old geezer in this business, been around for 400 years, I really appreciate the editorial, the sentiments behind it, the acknowledgement that there are standards, there should be ethical standards that reporters have and adhere to. They can't just steal someone's words and images and pretend as though, well, you're in the open public space, you can't say it, you know. Because I had this conversation earlier, Colin, with some journalists on the show. Journalists all the time cut deals with the people they cover, people in power. And they'll say, well, this is off the record. And so you will read it. Any newspaper, including these newspapers where all these old geezer journalists were ripping you, in the same newspaper, these journalists will be like, a source close to a source said that. Dude, why are you protecting the identity?
It's all about building relationships with your subjects, right? I mean, come on. Like, we're trying to build, like,
agrees with you.
It's exactly what we at the Daily Northwestern, at Northwestern as a whole, are trying to talk about is, you know, how do we build relationships with our subjects so we're not parachuting in, so we're not just getting our clips and bouncing out. How do we make sure our intentions are clear? How do we, like, oh, like, if you're not comfortable saying that, okay, how do we navigate this as we were just talking about and avoiding the whole a source to a source said this? No. Like,
no, that's what they do in the source to a source, they're covering the identity of the source. Like, half the time I'm reading that, I'm like,
And it's ironic, right? Seeing that, and then this happens here at Northwestern, and we get the backlash because we're young and we're accessible, and, you know, this is why we're having these conversations.
Well, I might say, and this is me speaking, and I am not putting words in Colin's mouth.
Colin. Okay?
Colin, my bad. I don't know why I think it's Colin. Anyway, Colin Powell. Colin, I'm not putting words in Colin's mouth, but I think this fits into a larger narrative that I think is utterly bogus, and that has to do with older people, particularly conservatives, looking at younger people and mocking them because, what, they want to be the ones who identify who they are and, you know, what their identity is, their cultural identity, their gender identity, what have you. This fits into a larger discussion that this younger generation is too sensitive and we should be allowed to insult them. God forbid you insult some Trump supporter on his or her positions on anything like religion or abortion, etc., then you're called insensitive. Do you follow what I'm telling you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So I think this fits into a very convenient narrative that's going on out there. Like, kids today, they don't have the, you know, they don't respect free speech. They were disrespectful to Jeff Sessions, and they're too sensitive. So I feel this kind of folds into a larger narrative. Anyway, that's me speaking, not Colin. I didn't mean to. Don't blame him for that one. Send your angry
no
tweets
comment.
To me. Yes, no comment from Colin Boyle. Colin, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming in here and taking the time. All right.
Always fun to come back to the Sun Times.
That's Colin Boyle. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.